The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can just leave your comment down here below, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you have the day off, happy Labor Day. Go ride your bike. It's gorgeous out. Anyway, it's gorgeous out here up in northeastern Connecticut. Let's get on to the show. Ron's rant of the week. So have you been watching the Vuelta? Yeah, it's hot. Really, really, really hot. And people are complaining to me about shortening stages. Get over it, man. It's too hot. It's too hot to push yourself that hard. We're going to talk about weather today. We're going to talk about heat today and how to deal with heat today. Just so you know, if you haven't been paying attention, the regional weather summaries for the past 2 weeks, Madrid recorded an average temperature low of 76 degrees Fahrenheit, 24 degrees centigrade, with a high reaching 99% Fahrenheit and lows dipping around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Costa Blanca recorded a warmer average around 83 degrees Fahrenheit, peaking at 95 Fahrenheit and lows around 66 Fahrenheit. So what does this mean? It means that it's really, really hot. And here's the problem. The problem is that they're estimating that 5,234 people have died from the heat-related causes from May 15th until August 31st. The highest number of deaths in August was recorded in the northeastern region of Catalonia. Of those who died, 1,283 were women, 866 were men, while 2,064 were aged over 65. And that even includes 1,285 who are over 85. Extreme heat can kill by causing heat stroke, aggravated cardiovascular respiratory disease, and with older people amongst the most vulnerable too. So anyway, when you look at temperatures exceeding 35 degrees Celsius, which is 95 degrees Fahrenheit, across most of the inland of Spain, that it's outrageously hot there. Final word, please be cautious in the heat and don't come down on the riders for not wanting to ride in extreme heat. This is just, it's not rocket science, folks. This is science. Yes, it is. You probably shouldn't do that. So we're going to move on to the positive side. On a positive side, I'm going to say it again, just like I did last week. School is back. I want everyone to be super alert out there locally, UConn, ECSU. Watch for cyclists and buses and pedestrians and anyone on campus who is listening. Wheels on the road, feet on the sidewalk. Please keep your scooters and bikes off the sidewalk, and if you must, pedestrian speed only. Thanks. By the way, a lot of those scooters and bikes, now powered by electric motors, can go as fast as the cars can on campus. So why aren't you in the road? Get out there in the road where you belong. Anyway, that's me. I'm ranting, and I'm also trying to be positive, but it's really, really hard because the scooters drive me nuts. But anyway, and remember, please be careful out there because someone is waiting for that person that you are aggravated with being in front of you at the end of the day. So just be patient, be kind. So the Vuelta on a positive side. How can one competitor's exit make changes in a race overnight? Wow, are things ever developing in the Vuelta? We're going to talk a lot more about that in the latter part of the show. And then lowering speeds in cities, a key lever for Vision Zero in Europe. I've got some great things to talk about there. There's really good, interesting data out there about why we're driving too fast and why we need to slow down. And this is how we keep pedestrians and cyclists alive. Yes, siree. This is Bicycle Talk. We talk about this kind of stuff a lot. Anyway, the mechanical minute and bicycle tips. It's the heat, silly. It's all about the heat today. The heat has been outrageous, and it's been really outrageous over in Europe. They were faced with it at the Giro. They were faced with it at the Tour de France, and now they're dealing with the Vuelta. Now, the Vuelta has always been a hot race. It's always been that place where you're going to see a lot of extreme heat, and it's just the time of year that it is and the latitude that they sit at, and they just generally tend to be a hot country. So when you put on a 20 or 21 day bicycle race there, it can really make a lot of effect. So there's riders dropping out right and left because it's just too hot. So to avoid heat issues as a cyclist, let's talk about this. Ride during the early morning or late evening hours. Hydrate aggressively with electrolytes and wear lightweight, light-colored, and breathable clothing. Adjust your schedule and your intensity. Ride early or late, right? Shorten your mileage. You don't have to go out and do that 60-mile ride today, do you? Drop it down to 30. You'll feel better. You'll recover better. Everything will be better. Slow down your pace. Do you really, really have to ride that fast? Is that critical to how you're going to handle yourself in the next group ride you go on? I don't think so. So just cool your jets a little bit. Cool your jets, cool your body. Hey, it all works, right? Choose shaded routes. My favorite of all. You know, I have always been a guy that has lived on roads with names, not with numbers. And there's a lot of reason why. The roads with the names out here are shaded, heavily shaded, some of them. And if you're really, really clever about it, when you put your rides together, you can find some parts of even your area that may be a little bit more shaded than others are. Maybe it's a neighborhood where it's been established over the years and a lot of trees have grown there. And so now you're riding through some neighborhood streets, but you're keeping cool because you're under the shade. Maybe it's the local rail trail, which happens to have no power lines, so therefore no real reason to open it up and you know, take away the shading that happens. But you can find shaded routes if you're smart about it. You just got to think about it. My word always, roads with names, not with numbers. Someday the book will be entitled that. Yeah, I haven't gotten around to that yet. Anyway, maybe someday. So you want to just pick the places that make more sense to ride and stay off of those big wide state roads that have absolutely no shading whatsoever because they've cleared all the trees away to make the roads faster and more dangerous. We won't get into that at the moment. That's another subject for another day. Hydration and nutrition. Stay hydrated. Drink plenty of fluids in the 24 hours leading up to your ride so your body starts with a solid baseline for sweating. Use electrolytes. Mix electrolytes in your water bottle instead of drinking plain water alone, which helps prevent dangerous sodium imbalances like hyponatremia during heavy sweating. I don't know if I got that word right. Anyway, pre-cool your drinks, freeze your bottles, or hydration mixes partially overnight so they stay cold and refreshing during your ride. By the way, it doesn't take very long for a water bottle to warm up from being frozen these days, especially if you're out in the really, really hot day. Wear your proper cycling kit, loose fitting, light colored, moisture wicking jerseys, and avoid cotton or heavy thermal base layers. Now, I'm gonna put a little addition in here. I like wearing a base layer in the hot weather. Usually it's sleeveless. Usually it's extremely light. It draws the moisture away from my body. I'm much more comfortable when I wear them. I don't have that issue of you climb up to the top of a hill and you're sweating profusely, and then you go down the hill on the other side and now you're freezing to death. It really makes a difference. Try it sometime. Super thin, nothing heavy duty, nothing that's going to make you hotter, but will actually help move the moisture around a little bit more, draw the moisture out to the outside of the jersey. The jersey then dries off as you're going down the hill. It really works well. And don't forget, you can use ice management, stuffing cubes inside your arm warmers, or place ice wrapped in a small pouch or a sock directly against your back, neck, and your chest to cool the blood flowing close to your skin. Also, applying sunscreen. Don't forget, use at least a sweat-resistant SPF 30 or higher sunscreen with, and reapply it regularly during long summer sessions. Now, the reapplying it is really difficult because you're all sweaty, but it still works. It still helps protect you. So those are my tips of the week as far as heat goes, because heat was the subject that we started with today, and it is definitely a subject that you need to pay attention to. Now that I wake up this morning and it is 54 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and it was cold in the house last night, I hate to say that, because it just means that, you know, Game of Thrones, winter is coming. It's starting to happen. We're starting to get a little bit of a turn in the temperatures here. So as I am complaining about the heat right now and warning you about the heat right now, we're about to hit fall here in New England. So things are starting to head in that direction. How do you know it's heading in that direction? Well, it's a few things that stick out. You know, the football season starts, so everybody starts thinking about the fall. Cyclocross has started, and we have the training races are in session right now, Wednesday nights at Rocky Hill. If you're interested in getting involved with that, that's kind of cool. Great thing to do if you've never played the game before. That's a great place to do it. So you can go check out the cyclocross races in Rocky Hill. Also, one is up and coming right here in Mansfield, Connecticut at Mansfield Hollow State Park, the annual Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross, promoted through Project Mayhem series, and we are number 4 in the series. So there are races almost every weekend now, and that will go on until December, probably. Okay, let's move on into the content of the show. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the speed issue. So there was I picked up this article, and so I thought it would be a good thing to talk about what's going on in Europe. It was through a Eurosport or Euro News site, and I'm just going to say it's the speed that kills. Why we would all be safer if we just slowed down. So, lower speeds in cities, a key lever for Vision Zero in Europe. The joint policy statement from Eurocities and European Transport Safety Council calls for stronger national and EU action to make lower urban speeds a central part of Europe's road safety policy and accelerate progress through Vision Zero. The EU has a goal to eliminate road deaths and serious injuries by 2050. Oh, God, that's a long ways away. Anyway, it's still there. With an interim target to reduce them by 50% by 2030. Okay, that's a little better. However, progress is stalled, particularly in urban areas where interactions between different road users and pedestrians and cyclists and other vulnerable road users remain especially exposed, while evidence shows that even small reductions in speed can significantly reduce the likelihood and severity of injuries. Remember, 20 miles per hour, 1 in 10 folks may end up not living through it. 40 miles an hour, 1 in 10 will bake it through. So anyway, I don't know if I got that right. Anyway, it's 20 miles per hour is the safety time. 9 survivors of a horrible crash will make it through, where on the other hand, it's the opposite. So it's a real situation here. And all I ask for here on my end, if Peddle and Ron were king and I had control of this situation, and I'm constantly pushing for this, but you know, it's hard to get people to slow down their motorized vehicles. There would be nothing but 20 mile per hour speed limits wherever there is a pedestrian crosswalk. That would make our city so much safer. Our college campus would be so much safer. That and eliminating the scooters on the sidewalk. Oops, I went there again. Anyway, what they found out was safer speeds depend heavily on national rules, where legal technical governance and enforcement frameworks support municipalities. 30 kilometers per hour can become the default urban speed, with 50 kilometers per hour reserved for clearly justified exceptions. Where national frameworks are restrictive, implementation is slower, more fragmented, and more vulnerable to legal challenges. So 30 kilometers per hour is 20 miles per hour. That would fit just fine for me. 20 miles per hour, if I am on my bicycle, and even if I'm only going 10 or 12 miles per hour, the impact from behind, because I am riding on the right-hand side of the road, by someone who's going 20 miles per hour is almost negligible. Yeah, you're going to get hit, you're going to get bruised, for sure, but you're not going to die from it. So it's really, really, really important. A, make sure you're riding in traffic when you're riding with traffic, okay? So that means that you have to be going the same direction as the motorized vehicle is going. Do not ride against traffic. It doubles your impact. It does not help anyone in any way. It's confusing to the driver. It's of the motorized vehicle. It's confusing for the cyclist because they can't really communicate their turns at intersections. Just don't do it. When you are in traffic, you must become traffic. That is the idea. So anyway, this is what they're pushing for in Europe right now, which I think is really cool. And that's why I pulled this up. Now we go to America. Yeah, American drivers think speeding is okay because everyone else is doing it, right? And that's it. You go down the road and you end up, and I used to have this argument because I spent a lot of time on the road in my car because I was a road warrior. I was a sales representative in the bicycle industry for a number of years. So what it forced me to do was to get into my car and drive places to see my dealers and to show them all the latest of what was new and all that. So I ended up spending a lot of time on the highway, and I found that everyone was literally flying down the highway. 70 miles per hour was the average slow speed, and 80 miles per hour was often seen. Would I ever go that fast? No. I tried to stay away from it if I could, but the speed limit signs posted at 55 and 65 miles per hour were often neglected. And when you get out in traffic like that, in order to continue to be safe, unfortunately, you kind of have to go at the slowest speed that everyone else is doing. If that's 70 miles an hour, it's 70 miles an hour. And if you go any slower, then you create more of a problem than you are, than others can deal with. So the moral of the story is, if everybody would just slow down and do the speed limit, we'd be a whole lot better off. But anyway, so what's a little speeding? The rest of America and some U.S. officials seemingly feel it's not a big deal. According to a AAA study, 3 out of 10 American drivers said speeding is perfectly normal and no one actually drives the speed limit anymore. Yet, additional studies have shown that mentality behind the wheel becomes comes with deadly consequences. These speedy drivers, surveyed through a focus group and a questionnaire conducted by the AAA Foundation of Traffic Station Safety, that's the American Automobile Association, by the way, said that they tend to drive a little faster because they need to get around a slower car, don't want to hold up traffic, or an admitted favorite, they wanted to beat the estimated travel time on their trip app. Many of these drivers claim that speeding is just the answer to keep up with general flow of traffic as everyone is speeding. I just said that. A commonplace example is where you could find this in a city area where posted speed limits in business loops might be 45 to 55 miles per hour, but the area's drivers typically run closer to 70 to 80 miles per hour. That or quiet rural two-lane roads with unposted speeds where everyone seemingly does 60 miles per hour. They do that going by my house. How do I know that? Because I have a Your Speed Now Is sign in front of my house. By the way, sidestep on that. If you're a cyclist and you're out there on the road and you see a Your Speed Is sign, do you try to pick it up on your bike to see how fast you're going? Sorry, bad habit. But I do that. It's kind of fun. And, you know, it's just one of those things. It's especially cool if it's on a downhill because you can actually, you know, get it to flash at you and tell you to slow down. That's kind of amusing. But anyway, that's a little side note there, a little bicycle side note. So anyway, with greater speeds come greater dangers, and yeah, the studies show that greater speeds become great dangers and a steep increase in traffic fatalities. In 2023, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found that almost one-third, about 29% of traffic deaths involved excessive speeding. In an Insurance Institute for Highway Safety study, fatalities on rural interstates increased 25 to 30% when states began increasing speed limits from 55 to 65 in 87. In 1989, about two-thirds of this increase, 400 deaths, was attributed to increased speed and the rest to increased travel. And another IIHS study found that an additional 37,000 people died in 1998 to 2017 after states increased the maximum speed limit by only 5 miles per hour. So that information doesn't seem to deter drivers from speeding, and it'll take a lot more to make them stop. A AAA study found that the only things that would get these drivers to slow down was law enforcement presence, as made obvious on the road by a sea of red brake lights. When a police vehicle is spotted in the vicinity, they also slow down for crashes and bad weather. Ironically, 87% of the surveyed drivers support an increase of law enforcement in areas that have a history of speed-related crashes, and 88% said they'd welcome increased enforcement in areas that had a potential for speed-related crashes. This also included speed enforcement cameras, but don't take away their right to speed. You can catch them speeding, but drivers were opposed to devices or technology that would actively limit their ability to speed, and installations of these things like speed bumps that would actively make drivers slow down lest you feel like destroying the suspension or sending your car into the air. Anyway, it's just amazing. So American drivers think that speeding's okay. Well, it's not, okay? It's really not, especially when you get into an urban area, when you get to a heavy pedestrian and cycling area where you're going to see lots of bicycles on the road, lots of people in crosswalks. You just got to slow down, folks. That's all. That's all I'm asking. Just slow down. And I found this other study from the Foundation for Traffic Safety that says attitudes towards speeding, it's insights from focus groups on a national survey of U.S. drivers. It's just really sad to see how people feel. Key findings from the focus groups: drivers generally viewed speed limits as appropriate, but did not view strict compliance as necessary. Just qualitative results indicated the absence of information about posted speed limits. Drivers primarily rely on two criteria when judging whether another driver is speeding: whether they were keeping pace with the surrounding vehicles. Not a race, folks. This isn't Grand Theft Auto. You're driving a car. You're driving a very, very dangerous weapon down the road. Please be careful. A common social threshold for speeding emerged around 10 miles per hour over the posted limit, which many participants viewed as acceptable and unlikely to result in enforcement. I have to admit, I have played that game, and it does seem to be the magic number in many areas. The flow of traffic functioned as a powerful social norm. Driving slower than surrounding traffic was often viewed as problematic. 49% of drivers agreed with the statement, "It's safer for me to drive with the flow of traffic than obey the speed limit." And there it is. I said that earlier. I used to play that game too when I was driving in intense traffic. Oh, boy. Perceptions of enforcement strongly influenced speed choices. Yeah, no kidding. In drivers' accounts, speeding was closely linked to feelings of autonomy and personal freedom. Many drivers described speed as a choice of a matter of personal discretion based on careful assessments. Oh boy. Less than half of the drivers supported using infrastructure-based countermeasures, but they were broadly seen as effective in reducing speeds, though they were. Automated enforcement was more popular, with nearly 3 in 4 drivers supporting their use in areas with high potential for speed-related crashes. Increased police presence received the highest support. 88% of drivers supported this strategy in areas with high potential for speed-related crashes. Oh, gosh. So, you know, this is what's going on. Drivers use forms of moral disengagement to justify speeding, including minimizing the potential consequences, arguing that speeding is actually safer, and then adhering to the speed limit, shifting responsibility to traffic conditions or other drivers, and distinguishing between safe and dangerous speedings. Oh, God. You know, this is the culture that we have created here. And this culture is, we're in a situation where, unfortunately, I don't see it being repaired in the immediate future, although I have strong feelings about the fact that it can be fixed. And I'm going to say it again, more butts on bikes. The more people that are on bicycles, the more people will ride bicycles. The more people that are on bicycles, the more we will get safer streets. Safer streets make slower streets. Slower streets make less traffic deaths. Does this at all make any sense whatsoever? Why are we making these ridiculously high-powered vehicles that are way oversized for the lanes of which they are allowed to drive in, and not paying attention to the one vehicle that could change everything? Yeah, it's Peddlin' Ron. This is Bicycle Talk. I'm so happy you're listening here. Remember, if you have a comment or you'd like to reach out to me in any way, it's bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you on all this. It's just mind-blowing to me how dangerous the roads can be. So we're going to get away from that right now, because I would like to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Vuelta. Anybody watching the Vuelta right now? The Vuelta España. Yeah, the Tour of Spain. It's a big deal. It's been a big deal for a long time, and it is truly one of the more entertaining races this year than it has been over the years, mainly because of the departure of the number one contender for the Vuelta. He was he is the current world champion, and his name is Tadej Pogačar, and he's Slovenian, and he's amazing, and you know, it's really, really sad that he crashed out and he's now suffering from some major surgery. He kind of broke his collarbone shoulder area. He got a major concussion in the process of the crash. He's just a mess. And, you know, as all things get better after time, he will be better and he will be back. He is not projected to be in the World Championships this year, which are coming up right after the Vuelta. And he was planning on going back and defending his jersey. And he probably had a good shot at that. He probably also had a very good shot at winning the Vuelta. He was already in the lead and had held the red jersey, which is the leader's jersey, for the entire time that he was in the race. So, you know, he was definitely headed in that direction, but things happen. It's really not completely clear what happened in front of him. Supposedly he hit a rock or an object in the road. They were traveling at around 30 miles per hour when it happened. He had one hand on the handlebar and one hand on a water bottle. That's a recipe for disaster. When you're drinking out of that water bottle and you're in a situation in a group ride and you're feeling in any way that you may not be as confident with one hand on your handlebars as maybe some of the other riders in the group, my word of advice to you, really, really simple, is to either veer out to the side of the group that you're riding with or go to the back, better yet, go to the back of the group. And then do your eating and drinking function, which is necessary for you to keep going on your bike. I understand that. That's really, really important. But if you are in any way uncomfortable with taking one hand off of the handlebars while you're cycling, move to the back. Do it safely. I hate hearing about anyone crashing. It's horrible. This guy is one of the best riders. Well, obviously, debatably, one of the best cyclists who has ever lived. And he is truly one of the best cyclists, if not the best cyclist in the world. And he had an incident and crashed. And I talk to friends of mine and they go, well, you know, it was just his time, you know, it always catches up with you eventually, blah, blah, blah. And it's all true. And if you take every day that you get on your bike and you think like that and think, you know what, this could be the day, I have to be careful today, maybe you'd be a little safer when you're out riding your bike. Just a little tip from Pedalin' Ron here. From a guy who's seen it before, and I will say that the times that I have probably felt the most confident on my bike have been the times that I've had either an incident or nearly had an incident on my bike. So don't take that for granted. You know, don't feel like, well, I am just like feeling so good, I'm so fit, I'm so strong, because one crash will take away all that fitness, all that strength, and it will make it so you have to spend a lot of time rehabbing to get back to that place again where you were when you were feeling so good. So it's important to be careful when you're out there. And if you're riding with other people, be extra careful. And if you're riding in traffic, how do I put this? I want you to ride aggressively if you're riding in traffic, because it's easier for the motorized vehicle driver to understand what you're doing when you're riding in a more aggressive manner, because it's understandable. They can see what you're doing. You're pointing out where you're turning. You're getting in the traffic lane to make the left turn so that you don't have to make a left turn across two lanes of traffic when it's time to go over there, which completely confuses drivers. So, yeah, anyway, let's go back to the Vuelta. I keep bouncing around here. So the heat is taking its toll on the Vuelta. And if you've been watching the Vuelta, even the last stage, they shorten the race because it's just too hot. And these riders they're cooking. So having already seen the first week of racing disrupted by hail and heavy rain. Remember that day? They actually shut the race down because of hail. And the hail was, they said golf ball. It looked like more like marble, but it was hail. And there was 2 inches of hail on the road. It was wild, wild, wild. Hail is created from crazy weather disruptions, thunderstorms, that sort of thing. And it happens, sometimes very much damaging hail. I talked about that a week ago and my experiences with damaging hail while riding a bike. Not something I would encourage you to go out and try to ride in, first of all, but it definitely can be tough. So the 15th stage, which was the last stage, which was this past Sunday, was shortened to 110 kilometers due to the extreme temperatures. Temperatures well over 40 degrees centigrade were recorded at the finish. And just so you know what that is, I've got a little chart right here in front of me. That's 104 degrees Fahrenheit, folks. Yeah, that's real, real hot. So it definitely was a good move for them to shorten the race. The outlook for the crucial final week is obviously considerably better. While it'll be hot, the temperature is just over 30 degrees Celsius. The extreme conditions over the past few weeks or in few days are likely to be a thing of the past. So 30 degrees Celsius, as per my chart right here, is exactly 86 degrees Fahrenheit, just to give you an idea. I had to print a little chart here today. That's what I'm looking at here. If you want to see it, take a little shot of it, screenshot. There it is. yeah, I need notes. I can't remember any of this stuff. And I'm not real good at the conversion thing. I have a hard time with it. Some things I'm pretty good with, but I'm still trying to learn the European and rest of the world way of things. So anyway, let's move on to more of the Vuelta, because the Vuelta has been entertaining at the minimum, for sure. We got all sorts of things going on here. We have just completed stage 15, and stage 15 is now, we are currently Labor Day rest day. It's actually rest day, and I can pull up what the next stage is going to be right here. So our following stage on Tuesday that we're going to be jumping into here looks like it is going to be one of those fast ones. It starts at a higher elevation. It ends very, very flat. So it looks like a sprinter's race by the looks of things. So we'll see what happens there. And then stage 17, 185 kilometers. Let me see what that one looks like here. And that will be this guy right here. And we are looking at, again, another flat stage. So we got a couple of flat stages coming up here for sure. And then we've got to start seeing some hills here, because we are getting deep into this race. Individual time trial is 32 kilometers on Thursday. So that can make a big change, because we've got a couple of players in there that, I'm not talking about minutes apart, I'm talking seconds apart. And yes, minutes apart is definitely where it is as far as the leader of the race goes. And I will talk about that in a minute, but that individual time trial at 32 kilometers is going to be critical, because we have Primoz Roglic is one of the fastest time trial riders in the world. And that could turn into a really, really serious situation. On stage 19, we have, I just lost my screen, and I hate that when this happens, pop-ups. So anyway, we are going to have to pass on that right now, because it does not look like we're going to be able to pull it up. Stage 19 is a 210 kilometer race, so we shall have to see what happens there. And it is looking like hills, big hills, with a mountaintop finish at 210 kilometers. That's going to be a game changer right there, and could be another game changer of the actual race itself. So we'll see what happens. Stage 20 is a roller coaster. It's just pounding, pounding hills one after another. So the race isn't over yet, but it certainly has developed in kind of a really, really exciting way. So the official classification right now, Enric Mas is winning the race right now. He is leading the race by 2 minutes and 6 seconds. Felix Gall is right behind him at the 2:06, but here's where it gets interesting. At 2:10, it's Primoz Roglic. So we've got between second and third, there is a very, very, very close, 4 second difference. And then Richard Carapaz has popped back in, and he is now in fourth place. And he is 4 minutes and 24 seconds off of the lead, but that only makes him 2 minutes off of Primoz Roglic. And Richard Carapaz is definitely in the game. And Oscar Only is fifth place, and he is 5 minutes and 44 off the lead, but that makes him only about a minute away from Richard Carapaz. So the race has become a race. It has become very interesting. We took a key factor out of the race. Sorry to hear it, but Tadej Pogačar did have a very serious crash and is unfortunately out for the count. He will not be back for the World Championships, if you haven't been listening to me earlier. So we're not going to see Tadej for a while. He's got some serious injuries to recover from. But he'll be back, and I'm assuming that he will be back at the same level. I've been having this conversation with cycling friends who watch racing a lot with me, and we're thinking that Jonas Vingegaard, after that last crash that he had, he might make a decision to leave bike racing. It would be sad to see, because he is truly one of the best cyclists in the world and a great Grand Tour rider. But one thing I can tell you about Jonas is he is a family man, and he really, really loves and adores his family. And that might have been the crash that makes him change his mind about whether he wants to continue to race on the professional level. So we'll see what happens, but this could also be a big eye-opener for Tadej Pogačar. He's won a lot. I know he wants to win a lot more. I know he wants to be the greatest cyclist who's ever lived, albeit we still are strong supporters of Eddy Merckx here as far as one of the greatest cyclists that has ever lived. His stats are just beyond compare at this point. Even with Tadej Pogačar, his stats are beyond compare. The difference is that Tadej is still young. And because he is still young, he still has a chance to go after some of the Eddy Merckx history and his legacy. So we're just going to have to see. Is he the best cyclist right now in the world? Absolutely. No question about it. There's no one even close to him, I don't think. Maybe it would be Jonas Vingegaard, but even Jonas is just not at that same level. They're close, but they're not that close. So, we're going to have to see what happens to Tadej. I'm going to keep my eye on him and see what's going on here. So individually, that's where the race is. The points jersey. Wout van Aert. Never doubt Wout. Wout is never out. He has been having a spectacular race. He's won a couple of stages. He is on a mission, and it is just really, really, really fun to watch this guy. He currently has 267 points. This next closest competitor to him, who is also on his team, is Jay Brennan, and he's got 159 points. Here's the big catch right here. Between second and third, Eero O'Malley from the Astana team has 153 points. So that's very, very close, second and third in the points series. But basically, Wout van Aert, all he has to do is keep upright and continue to ride like he's riding. I love watching this guy because He is just so aggressive, and he knows the pain cave, I think, better than most riders out there. He's also near and dear to my heart because he's a cyclocross racer, and I loved watching the cross racers come in, the Pidcocks and the Van Aerts and others come in, and the Matthew Vanderpoels come in, and out of the cross, you know, the 1 hour, go as hard as you can, and, you know, tasting blood in your mouth the whole time. It's just cross. And that skill set that they have and all, and now all of a sudden they're Grand Tour and they're classic winners, and it's just really fun to watch that development happen. I've always said, if, and I will repeat this, if you are ever interested in getting involved in bicycle racing, if bicycle racing somehow has caught your interest, maybe you've been listening to Pedal and Ron a lot on the radio, and you're going, you know what, maybe I should give this a try. I like to ride my bike, and I like to go fast on my bike, but I don't know if I'm up for it. Do a season of cross first, please. Cyclocross is a game changer for a lot of people as far as their handling skills go. And if you go into even in an amateur race, if you go into bicycle racing without certain skills, and two of those skills are ability to handle your bicycle in tricky situations, and the second one is ability to ride your bike safely amongst others. And if you have both of those skills developed before you decide to slap a number on your back and give this thing a try, then you'll be happier, you'll be more successful, and you will truly understand the thrill of bicycle racing that I was fortunate enough to have spent 10 years of my life doing. So it's cyclocross is a door opener here. If anyone ever approaches me about getting involved in bicycle racing because they know I'm passionate about it, they always say, I want to get into bike racing, Ron. What do I need to know? And I go, you need to know that you have to spend one season, just one season, on a cyclocross bike. And when you do that, you'll understand it later. And I have had so many people come up to me afterwards and say, you know, that advice you gave me about doing cyclocross and how much I hated doing it. And I go, yeah, I know all about it. And they said, it was the best advice I ever received. It changed me as a rider. And it's definitely a good, positive thing. So that's my feeling if you want to get involved in cyclocross. Let's move on to the climber in the Vuelta a España. And that will be Botrego from Baja Victorious. He's got 69 points. He's followed by Wout van Aert very closely at 40 points. And Enric Mas, the tour leader right now, at 24 points. And there's very, very little difference between 4th, 5th, and 6th. So it's a tight little race for the climber. The youth jersey goes to Botrago, also from Bahrain Victorious. It goes to Oscar Only, and he is he's got not a lot of time over this, but anyway, he's got about 30. He's got a very close rider from Bahrain Victorious, Ormazel, and they're all very, very close. There's some young riders that are definitely in here, and it's nice to see and great to watch. The fourth place rider is Matthew Risatello from, guess where? The United States. Yes, siree. Matthew is in fourth place as best young rider. He's definitely shown up on the radar, which is pretty cool. And there's another story that I have about him, but I'm not going to be able to get to today because I don't believe he was chosen for the world's team. And that just seems crazy to me, but that's another story. We'll find out more about that, and I'll let you know as I get more information. And of course, the number one team is going to be the Decathlon CMA CGM team, and followed by Astana, Bahrain Victorious, and EF Education in fourth, and Groupama, FDJ in fifth. So as much as these hot riders are riding for different teams. The team rankings are surprisingly different than what I would have expected. But knowing that Tade is not in there anymore, then it's pretty understandable. The Movistar team is in eighth place overall, which doesn't make the Spanish people really, really happy, but, you know, it's what it is. And then, of course, what else we have here? We got a bunch of withdrawals in here, so it's kind of just kind of crazy here. 10, 12, 20 more, over 30, almost 40 withdrawals. That's a lot of people pulling out. Why? Going back to the original start of this entire discussion on today's program, the heat. The heat is taking people out right and left. So anyway, that's what we got going on in that particular part of the world. Let's go to this part of the world. Project Mayhem Cyclocross. Yeah, Mischief, Harmony, and Cyclocross. Good stuff, right? Big shout out to my friend Richard Sachs, a longtime frame builder here in the state of Connecticut, who's built many bicycles, one of which I rode for 5 years. Very, very nice hand-built, custom-made bicycles. It's not a product endorsement. I'm just shouting out to someone who has dedicated his life to cycling and lives here in the state of Connecticut and is a true craftsman and a lover of the sport. So maybe someday we'll do a little story on Richard. That might be a fun thing. So Project Mayhem Cross aims to deliver fun, exciting regional cyclocross series, providing an inclusive racing experience for all racers, regardless of background. They welcome racers of all backgrounds, genders, races, ethnicities, nationalities, religions, incomes, and abilities. Our team of promoters and event organizers transfer every event into a compelling destination, attracting both participants and spectators alike. So what do we have? On the 11th of this month is a clinic at Belltown in Portland, Connecticut, followed by on the 12th and 13th, the Belltown Throwdown number 1 and number 2. It's a whole race weekend on the 12th and 13th. On the 19th, there is a clinic at the Hidden Valley in New Haven, Connecticut. And on the 20th, there is a doubleheader Hidden Valley in New Haven, followed by, so that will be that weekend, sorry. And then on the 27th, there is Damned at the Dam, which is Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross. On the 14th, there is a clinic in November 14th, go all the way from September to November. There's nothing in October. That's very interesting. There is a clinic on the 14th in Wallingford, Connecticut. On the 15th, there is Moran Cross, which is in Wallingford. And on the 29th of November, the Orchard Scorcher in Guilford, Connecticut, which is the final race of Project Mayhem Cyclocross. So that's where we're at as far as cyclocross goes right here in Connecticut. There's also a Massachusetts series that is the Valley Cross Series, I think is what it's called. I'm not 100% sure on that. A lot of these races interact with it. So there is cyclocross racing galore going on here in New England. If you are listening from afar and you're looking for a nice little fall adventure, come on out and race cross out here. We've got a lot to offer, and it's a very, very exciting place. It is truly one of the, I would say the roots of U.S. cyclocross sort of started right here in New England. We've had a lot of things happening. I have been referred to by a friend of mine as one of the grandfathers of New England cyclocross. I don't really want to be a grandfather, but that's okay. Well, maybe I do. Now, that's shout out to my son. Nah, I'm not going to expect anything there. No pressure. Anyway, so cyclocross is happening, and the Project Mayhem cyclocross is a fun time. If you're in the area and you want to give it a try, it's great. We have beginners races on every single race, so you can test yourself for your very first time at any of the Project Mayhem cyclocross races. We have kids races for those that are really, really young. It's just like a little 10-minute or less thing where we encourage young riders to get out there and play around, have fun. We have a huge juniors network here, so we've got lots of youth racing that happens. My master's races are truly the biggest ones of my entire race. When I put my race on, and I know there's a lot of master's people that are, and we're talking 40 plus basically, that are very involved with this. I'd like a shout out from anyone who might be listening who is looking for a 70 plus age category. I know. It seems crazy, doesn't it? But I'm getting more and more riders. So I'm not going to probably do it this year, but next year I may be throwing in an extra category for the old guys like me. So anyway, that's Project Mayhem Cyclocross, and that is it. That's what I got there. What else is new here? I think we have pretty much covered it. That kind of covers my events and upcoming event ideas of what's going on here. So we will move on to the finishing points. So TikTok, guess what? Diesel prices just shot up to close to $6 a gallon right now. Park the silly truck and be done with it. Ride your bike, man. Give it a try. It is time to do your own individual silent protest, and it won't be silent if you stop buying the fuel. It won't be silent. It will be seen. So yeah, we got a lot of things going on and wrong in the world right now, and that's why gas prices are so high. But this is your chance. This is your chance to say, you know what? I want to do something about this. Ride your bike, because bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and a safer option for more people, because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. So let's all work together and help more people know the joy of cycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Got to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Park that car or truck for a day. Ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving your car, please be safe and kind, and remember that every person you pass has someone waiting for them at home. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, of the management, or the licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, Dr. Fran. I think she's taking a nap. Anyway, if you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1 at gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!